I think God calls all of us to fill different roles at different times, and I think that he wanted Donald Trump to become president, and that's why he's there.
Who is God? Is this all a part of God's plan? Although our minds cannot particularly understand what's going on right now, and a lot of us tend to see it as a curse, is all of this really a part of God's plan? And if it is, which God is it? Is it your God? Is it the religion of that God, or the religion of, you know, that God's religion, or that God's religion? Whose idea is it? Maybe our small, feeble, simple minds cannot wrap themselves around how big God is, how massive and intricate his plan is. Maybe. And maybe somebody like Sarah Sanders is able to understand. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Camp It Out, episode number 284. My name is Melvin. I want to thank you so much for being here. So there was an SNL skit done a little while back with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And it was Sarah Huckabee Sanders' sleep aid. And people say, hey, people ask me, how do I sleep at night? Which is what they say because she's evil. And the president that she enables is absolutely evil. And the fact that she's willing to lie for him, the fact that she's willing to protect his racism and his child separation policy that tears children away from their parents. And people ask her all the time, you know, derisively, how do you sleep at night? But the skit was, you know, she took something that was so powerful. It was like 10 horse tranquilizers and a single cup or something. And she would take it and she would just drop flat and fall asleep for like 10, 15 hours or whatever. And get up just in time to tell all these journalists that they're biased and they're just a bunch of liberals and they just don't understand this particular president. So for me, I see what Donald Trump is doing and what Sarah Huckabee Sanders are doing as nothing more than evil, just plain and simple evil. But my mind probably is small, simple, and unable to wrap itself around the grand plan of God, whoever God is, or Jesus, white Jesus, whatever. Or maybe not. Maybe I really do see this for what it is, but I do want to explore the idea that Christian conservatives, and if you're a Christian, I don't have a problem with you if you're a Christian, but if you are a conservative Christian that supports Trump, then you've got some explaining to do. So Sarah Huckabee Sanders went on the Christian Broadcasting Network, and they asked her, and hey, you know, the Times, you know, Could this possibly all be a part of God's plan? So the first clip I play is obviously, yeah, God chose Trump. Ugh, if God chose Trump, I don't know that I want to go to heaven. If that's the guy that's in charge, I don't want to go to heaven.
From a spiritual perspective, for such a time as this, Donald Trump, of all people, to be, as you said earlier in the interview, the most conservative president, I mean, does it kind of, in a way, blow your mind that, you know, someone like Donald Trump, who is sitting in the Oval Office, I mean, I know you can list the accomplishments, but at the same time, just from a spiritual perspective, there are a lot of Christians that believe for such a time as this.
I think God calls all of us to fill different roles at different times, and I think that he wanted Donald Trump to become president, and that's why he's there. And I think he has done a tremendous job in supporting a lot of the things that people of faith really care about.
It's laughable. To most of us, it's laughable. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But whether you are in that movement or not, I want everyone to understand what this movement is, how big it is, and that this is one of the things that we are effectively going to be up against. So Donald Trump is not, I think he's the symptom of a much larger problem rather than the problem itself. We get rid of Donald Trump tomorrow, we get rid of Michael Pence, and we get rid of all these neo-Nazis that are in the White House. The hate, the underlying hatred and racism and misogyny that put them in there isn't going to go anywhere. And you say, well, okay, well, how do we take care of that? Well, first we have to understand its root. We have to understand what it means. We have to understand how big this idea is. And even though you and I may not subscribe to this idea, there are a whole effing lot of people that do. So an article here from The Guardian. Now, this is from back in October. So, quoting here, it was agreed by everyone, a miracle. The unexpected election of Donald Trump in 2016 was an act of God who chose the philandering billionaire and reality TV star to restore America's moral values. That is the theme of The Trump Prophecy. This is a new movie. A movie telling the story of Mark Taylor, a former fireman from Orlando, forced to retire after suffering from PTSD. Between graphic nightmares featuring demonic monsters and hellish flames, Taylor received a message from God in April 2011, so right around tax time, while he was surfing television channels. As he clicked to an interview with Trump, Taylor heard God say, "You are hearing the voice of the next president." So he hears voices, so Trump is chosen. The belief that Trump's election was God's divine will is shared by a lot of others. Franklin Graham, the prominent conservative evangelical, said last year that Trump's victory was the result of a divine intervention. Quote, "I could sense going across the country that God was going to do something this year. And I believe that God, at that election, God showed up," this according to the Washington Post. Taylor's made other claims, which he calls prophetic words, including that Trump will serve two terms. The landmark Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade will be overturned, and that the 2018 midterm elections will result in a red tsunami strengthening Republican control of both houses of Congress. We know what happened in 2018. It was not a red tsunami. It was quite blue, super duper 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 blue. But he goes on. The guy that made the Trump prophecy goes on to tell you the rest of God's plan. Barack Obama will be charged with treason, and Trump will authorize the arrest of thousands of corrupt officials, many of whom are part of a massive satanic pedophile ring. It goes on like this. Trump will also force the release of cures for cancer and Alzheimer's that are currently being withheld by the pharmaceutical industry on a monkey-navigated, jet-powered, and it goes on like this. About 1,200 cinemas, this is as of October last year, 1,200 cinemas across the U.S. were screening the Trump prophecy at one time. If you believe that Donald Trump is the chosen one, then it's not all that hard to believe that it was Barack Obama that should be arrested for treason and that Trump will cure cancer and Alzheimer's and maybe this guy's PTSD. It sounds bonkers, but this is a real thing. Liberty University, the right-wing, conservative, white supremacist, evangelical university had a huge hand in making this movie. They helped fund it, and they also had students that worked on the movie. And 1,200 theaters, in the grand scheme of things, isn't all of them, but it's certainly an awful lot. And although I was not watching Fox News at the time, I can promise you that this was almost certainly promoted by, at the very least, Mike Huckabee and Judge Jeanine Pirro. The thing that has really come out of the brand of Christianity that America tends to wield is oppression, and lots of it. The oppression of women, oppression of African Americans, the oppression of the LGBT Q community. That seems to me the real thing that has come out of it. But Trump gets asked to the prayer breakfast every year, and he gets to speak at the Right for Life marches. So this week, Trump went to the National Prayer Breakfast, and they gave him a script, and he tried very, very hard to read off of that script. And I'm going to play the clip of what he said, because what Donald Trump does is lies, and lies a lot. We'll get into that a little bit. We're over 8,500 lies that he has told just since he became president. But in this one moment, because he's really terrible at reading and he's not great at the English language, he was giving a speech in front of the National Prayer Breakfast, and he managed to accidentally say something that's actually true.
"Since the founding of our nation, many of our greatest strides from gaining our independence to abolition of civil rights to extending the vote for women have been led by people of faith and started in prayer.
Now, obviously, what he meant to say there was not that religion led the charge for oppressing civil rights, but that it was religion that helped gain people civil rights, which is the exact opposite. There's an article that was originally over on Forbes, and then it was taken down, and it ended up on Political Orphans, which is a website that captures these stories that are generally, sometimes they don't go up at all. Sometimes they go up for just a little bit, but then they get taken down for any number of reasons. And the headline on this one is why white evangelicalism is so cruel. Quoting here, Robert Jeffress, pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas and an avid supporter of Donald Trump, earned headlines for his defense of the president's adultery with a porn star. Regarding the affair and subsequent financial payments, he explained, he says, even if it's true, it doesn't matter. Such a casual attitude toward adultery, by the way, one of the seven deadly sins, and prostitution might seem odd from a guy who blamed 9/11 on America's sinfulness. However, seen through the lens of white evangelicals' real priorities, Jeffress' disinterest in Trump's sordid lifestyle makes sense. What we today call evangelical Christianity is the product of centuries of conditioning in which religious practices were adapted to nurture a slave economy. The calloused insensitivity of modern white evangelicals was shaped by the economic and cultural priorities that forged their theology over the centuries. And among evangelical churches, one denomination remains by far the leader in membership, theological pull, and political influence. There is still today a Southern Baptist Church. More than a century and a half after the Civil War and decades after the Methodists and Presbyterians reunited with their Yankee neighbors, America's most powerful evangelical denomination remains defined right down to the name over the door by an 1845 split over slavery. So, Southern denominations faced enormous social and political pressure from plantation owners. Public expressions of dissent on the subject of slavery in the South were not merely outlawed, they were a death sentence. Baptist ministers who rejected slavery, like South Carolina's William Henry Brisbane, were forced to flee to the North. Otherwise, they would end up like Methodist minister Anthony Bewley, who was lynched in Texas in 1860. His bones left exposed at a local store to be played with by children. Whiteness offered protection from many of the South's cruelties, but that protection stopped at the subject of race. No one dared speak truth to power on the subject of slavery, or later, Jim Crow. Generation after generation, Southern pastors adopted their theology to thrive under a terrorist state. Principal critics were often exiled or murdered, leaving voices of dissent few and scattered. So the evangelicalism that sprung up during Reconstruction was that of pure, white, hot cruelty. And you would think that if they knew anything about Christianity and read the New Testament, you would expect that they would be hostile to wealth. Remember the whole camel through the eye of a needle thing? They'd be hostile to wealth, empathetic in protection of justice, sympathetic to the point of personal pain towards the sick, persecuted, and the migrant, and almost socialist in their economic practices. None of these consistent Christian themes served interests of slave owners, so pastors could either abandon them, obscure them, or flee. What developed in the South was a theology carefully tailored to meet the needs of a slave state. Biblical emphasis on social justice was rendered miraculously invisible. It's been more than 100 years, but this idea still persists in the deep racist South. So we just got out of a government shutdown, and we are about to go into another government shutdown. As a result of the government shutdown, there were a lot of people that had to sell their belongings. There were a lot of people that had to that lost their homes and their apartments, or they or weren't able to get a loan approved, so they weren't able to move in somewhere. There were a lot of folks that weren't able to afford their medicine. There were folks that had to ration their insulin and ended up dying or getting very sick and coming close to dying. And this brought to us by the head of the event. This is effectively, he's not just the effective head of his party right now as president. He's effectively the head of the evangelical movement. So Ted Cruz, during the shutdown, stood up on the floor and was just complaining about how people need this and people need that. And Ted Cruz was right. But then Senator Michael Bennett stood up. Bennett is fairly quiet. He does his votes, you know, and he'll help sponsor legislation, but he doesn't say much. He doesn't do much. And if you ask people about him, it's possible that that people have met him and do not remember him because he doesn't leave much of an impression on anybody. But when Ted Cruz decided to stand up during the shutdown and cry his crocodile tears, he unleashed the Bennett.
So the only thing that is necessary to pass a clean bill paying the salaries of every man and woman in the Coast Guard is for the Democratic senators to withdraw their objection. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Madam President.
Senator from Colorado.
Madam President, I seldom, as you know, rise on this floor to contradict somebody on the other side. I've worked very hard over the years to work in a bipartisan way with the presiding officer, with my Republican colleagues, but these crocodile tears that the senator from Texas is crying for first responders are too hard for me to take. They're too hard for me to take. Because when the senator from Texas shut this government down in 2013, my state was flooded. It was underwater. People were killed. People's houses were destroyed. Their small businesses were ruined. Forever. This government is shut down over a promise the President of the United States couldn't keep. And that America is not interested in having him keep. This idea that he was going to build a medieval wall across the southern border of Texas, take it from the farmers and ranchers that were there, and have the Mexicans pay for it, isn't true.
So the headline over at The Guardian, love of Trump covers a multitude of sins for Christian conservatives. First of all, the guy is a millionaire. And the Bible tells you right there that this prick is not going to get into heaven. And then all of the folks that he hired for his administration, they're also very, very rich. Millionaires and billionaires. Wilbur Ross among them is the Commerce Secretary. So Wilbur Ross, during the shutdown, decided to go on one of these televised financial talk shows. And they asked him, hey, how about all these people? You know, what about safety? What about their money? And you got to understand, the president's a billionaire. Everyone that works for him is a billionaire. That's their interest. They don't care about you. If you ask the white Christian conservative evangelical movement, they will tell you that these guys are there for them and that these guys are there to serve them and that they are looking out for them, but they really don't care. And that tone deafness came through in a very large and loud way when, without a script, they decided to ask old man Ross about what about all these workers?
Mr. Secretary, there are reports that there are some federal workers who are going to homeless shelters to get food.
Well, I know they are, and I don't really quite understand why, because, as I mentioned before, the obligations that they would undertake, say a borrowing from a bank or a credit union, are in effect federally guaranteed.
One of the things that the Trump administration has done since they have taken over the CPB is that one of the things the CPB does is they decided to make it illegal or make it very, very hard for payday loan places to exist. And why? The only folks that use payday loan places are the very, very poor. And what it does, because the APRs on the loans that you get from a payday lender are somewhere between 400 and 900%. And the way that these are justified is the payday lenders say, hey, APR stands for annual percentage rate. They're not going to have these loans for a year. These are short-term loans. So yeah, 400 and 800 sounds like usury, which by the way, is against the Bible. And it is usury. They say, but these are short-term loans. But even 1 week out of 52 weeks on a 400 or 800% loan, it comes out to a lot of money. And it puts poor people into this perpetual cycle that they're unable to ever get out of. The Trump administration really gave an S about any of these people, really gave an S about the poor. He would not be lifting those rules and making it easier for payday lenders to loan shark to these people who really, really, really need the money. Now, there's any number of things that we can do to get these folks money, but the payday loan industry is not great. And so where does Wilbur Ross think all these folks should go? Does he think they should go to payday lenders? Hell, if they're poor, their credit's probably not all that great. And they very likely can't go to a bank. And it's not just that the bank would charge them outrageous interest rates. It's likely that the bank wouldn't make the loan at all. But see, these folks don't understand you. Wilbur Ross has likely never worked a day in his life. Donald Trump has never worked a day in his life. And they don't care. But somehow this is still considered the head of the evangelical movement. This is still their guy. This is still their God. And it's absolutely stunning to me. Wilbur Ross goes on.
Do you worry about safety at this point?
Well, I do worry about safety. And it's kind of disappointing that the air traffic controllers are calling in sick in pretty large numbers, depending on the week.
Many of them can't afford to support their families, though.
Well, remember this. They are eventually going to be paid. Put it in perspective. You're talking about 800,000 workers. And while I feel sorry for the individuals that have hardship cases, 800,000 workers, if they never got their pay, which is not the case, they will eventually get it. But if they never got it, you're talking about a third of a percent on our GDP. So it's not like it's a gigantic number overall.
If they never got their pay, remember, it's just a teeny tiny fraction. Now, if you and your family, the people around you, the money that you make that makes your lifestyle possible, these things are very, very important to you as an individual. Think about how important your job is to you. The fact that you have a place to live and food to eat and a warm home. Think about what those things mean to you. Now, multiply that by 800,000. And that doesn't even cover the contractors. Multiply that by 800,000. And this guy says, you know what? Even 800,000, it's a pretty small number economically. If these folks never got a job again, and by the way, at the end, so when we had the crash in 2008, you know, we were losing 700,000 jobs a month, and it got to be millions and millions and millions of jobs. Had we had 1 month of those losses, yeah, things might have turned out okay, and the recession might have ended sooner. But it wasn't that. It was month after month after month. So he might be right, but it doesn't matter. Your cold, calculated, evangelical Christian president picked this guy and endorses these policies. It doesn't care if you eat, doesn't care if you have medicine, and does not care if you have a place to live.
Thank you very much, my fellow Americans. I am very proud to announce today that we have reached a deal to end the shutdown and reopen the federal government. As everyone knows, I have a very powerful alternative, but I didn't want to use it at this time.
So the government is reopened. Yes, it's true, but we really are just in between government shutdowns right now. Another one is coming, and even if another one doesn't come, at least not on the 15th like we anticipate, if the president decides to declare a national emergency, he's going to have a really hard time doing that. If he decides to declare a national emergency, it's going to make it possible for future presidents to declare a national emergency over, say, gun violence, which is an honest-to-God problem because we have mass shootings damn near every single day, or climate change, which has led to these wild weather swings and wildfires and climate refugees. Those things sound like an honest-to-goodness emergency. The fact that border crossings have been dropping, let me say that one more time, dropping since 1971 does not constitute an emergency. And I really loved SNL's take on this.
President Trump on Friday announced a deal to temporarily reopen the government for 3 weeks while negotiations continue over border security. 3 weeks. We're basically treating our government like it's a trial period for a Hulu subscription. It's pretty clear that Trump has not figured out how to deal with Nancy Pelosi yet. Usually when a woman is giving him this much trouble, he just gives her 130 grand to shut up.
And the tone deafness did not end with Wilbur Ross. When Trump was reopening the government, he decided to thank all of those people that supported him. By the way, I don't know that it was a lot of folks who were knocking in their paychecks and couldn't afford their homes or their food or their medicine that were really congratulating him. But in an effort to, well, tell another lie, because he'll never miss an opportunity to do that, in an effort to screw over working people and deny you your basic rights, he just wanted to thank you all for encouraging him, his word, encouraging him to keep going.
I want to thank all of the incredible federal workers and their amazing families who have shown such extraordinary devotion in the face of this recent hardship. You are fantastic people. You are incredible patriots. Many of you have suffered far greater than anyone but your families would know or understand. And not only did you not complain, but in many cases you encouraged me to keep going because you care so much about our country and about its border security.
In the next segment, we're going to get into what is now being referred to more and more commonly as the zero humanity policy happening on the border.
Them had not even been able to say goodbye to their children. They sat in the room next door as they heard their children yelling for them, and they were not able to go and speak to their children. And for weeks, they didn't know where their children were. Most of these women, most of the men, were seeking asylum. And your department, instead of allowing them their legal right to seek asylum, your department instead imposed a zero humanity policy to prosecute them in mass proceedings, resulting in the U.S. government tearing thousands of children from their moms and dads. And this is still happening. And the truth is, we may not know how many children were separated from their parents.
That's Pramila Jayapal. I always got to say it a few times. Congresswoman from Seattle. And Matt Whitaker went in front of a committee this week and was answering some questions. And of course, he's not ready for prime time, which is probably why he's the acting AG right now. And so when the Republicans had their chance to ask a question, they would say, oh my God, what's going on the border? How terrible is the border? Got to do something about the border. And whenever the Democrats had a chance, they would ask him a more legitimate question. And of course, the child separation policy, which the Trump administration said never was a policy, and then said, yes, it was a policy, but it was actually Obama's policy. And then, of course, signed an executive order, just like the executive order that started it, and signed another executive order that ended it. But a judge said that they had to reunite all of these families with all of these children that were ripped away from them. So in case you missed it, and I'm sure you didn't, the idea inside the Trump administration was when folks were seeking asylum, by the way, a legal process, and it's not something that you can do from home. You have to present yourself at the border in order to seek asylum. So when these families were seeking asylum, they would have their children ripped away from them, and then they would be deported, and then their children would be given to either family members or foster homes. The Trump administration thought that what was going to happen was once news got out that they were ripping children from their families, then that would create enough terror in the hearts of these asylum seekers, and they would stop coming here, and he could say, aha, I, Donald Trump, have stopped the threat. Instead, what happened is all they did was carried out this Christian evangelical president, carried out an insanely cruel policy to separate families, tear children away from their families, and what Pramila Jayapal calls a zero humanity, because they called it zero tolerance, calls it a zero humanity policy. And the headline this week from AP, well, the story that ran in the AP, so this from the Trump administration, reuniting some separated migrant families might be too hard. So what's the story there? So the Trump administration does not want to take the time or spend the effort or the money putting these families back together. Why? Because they didn't care before and they definitely don't care now. It was a racist policy to begin with. It was something that they just did to please their racist base. And they don't really care about putting these families back together. But instead of saying that, what they decided to say instead was the folks or the families are going to be really hard to find. And you know what? These kids have now been with these foster families for so long that if we take them away from their foster families and put them back with their natural families, this is real. This is a real explanation that it will cause untold amounts of damage to the children since they are so used, this is a real thing, to having these adopted families now. Giving them back to their natural families will cause all kinds of emotional and mental damage, so on and so forth, all kinds of damage to these children. So the Trump administration is now concerned about the damage that is going to be done to these children. Pramila Jayapal, sitting in front of Matt Whitaker, or had Matt Whitaker sitting in front of her, not answering her questions, finally just decided to lose it.
So these parents were in your custody, your attorneys are prosecuting them, and your department was not tracking parents who were separated from their children. Do you know what kind of damage has been done to children and families across this country? Children who will never get to see their parents again. Do you understand the magnitude of that?
There are private contractors who are put in charge of these children and these families. The private prison companies that make money on American prisoners are now making money on locking up, housing, feeding, clothing, the folks who come over the border and get detained. And these private contractors are paid $750 per person per day to detain immigrants. Now, if you are a Christian conservative and you are concerned about the amount of money that the government spends on these immigrants, picture this. What does your rent cost you a month? Is it $1,000, $1,200, $1,400, $1,500, $2,000? Let's say your rent is $1,500 a month. Let's say you live in either a one- or two-bedroom apartment. And I know if you live in D.C., it's probably like $25, but let's go with $15. Let's go with $1,500. So what it costs to detain one immigrant for 2 days is what it costs for your rent in a month. Think about that. You hate, you as a Christian conservative, hate these goddamn brown people trying to come over our border and get welfare and all that. But you have no problem paying in your taxpayer dollars $750 per person per day to feed them. And it's not that, see, these folks don't get to stay in the Ritz for that kind of money. They're put in cages. What does it probably cost somebody like the Geo Group or any of these other contractors that make their money incarcerating Americans? It probably costs them a few dollars a day per person. And we pay them through a no-bid contract negotiated by your white Christian evangelical president $750 when it probably doesn't even cost them $50 a day. So the child separation policy and the racist policy on the border does two things. It takes all of Donald Trump's rich white contractor friends and it makes them rich. And it takes all of his poor white Christian supporters and it fleeces them. It takes money out of their pocket and it also satisfies the racism that they have deep, deep, deep within their hearts. It should be a concern to everybody, as it is to me, that the president seems wildly incapable of telling the truth. I'm going to give you a number right now, but the minute I say it, it's going to change. The number, as of February 3rd, and I'm not taping on the 3rd, I'm taping a few days after, was 8,459. It's probably 8,600 by now. Maybe it's even 8,700. Because the amount of lies that the president is telling is growing all the time. This headline, when I first set this article aside, said President Trump made 8,158 false or misleading claims in his first 2 years. 8,500, 8,501, 8,502, 8,503. The guy cannot stop lying. So that's a concern for me. Quoting here, this includes an astonishing 6,000 plus claims about in the president's second year. So 6,000 plus are just told in his second year. Put it another way, the president averaged 5.9 false or misleading claims per day in his first year in office, but he hit nearly 16 and a half a day in his second year, almost triple the pace. The Washington Post started this project as part of the coverage of the president's first 100 days, largely because they could not possibly keep up pace and volume with the president's misstatements. Readers demanded that they keep it going for the rest of Trump's presidency. There's a guy that I saw on, I think it was CNN recently, and his job is to track and document and fact check all of the president's lies. And he sat there very, very nicely. And he answered the questions, but effectively, you could hear it in his voice. Kill me. Please kill me. Oh my God, I'm so sick of doing this. It's got to be hard. Like, that's his whole life, just tracking this guy's lies. And this guy has told a ton of them. And he's done so with ease. This white, Christian, evangelical leader. So I heard Franklin Graham on with Craig Melvin on MSNBC, and he asked him, he goes, you know, Franklin, I know this guy's the leader of your church. You think that God chose him, God put him there, this is divine, so on and so forth, but he lies a lot. You guys really okay with that?
He wrote an op-ed for Fox News recently. I've read that op-ed, and you wrote in part that truth is 100% right. The Washington Post, as you probably know, the Washington Post fact checker, their analysis reports that the president of the United States has made 8,158 false or misleading claims in his first 2 years. How do you reconcile that?
Well, I don't know how to reconcile that because, I mean, I don't know. You have a fact checker for the president, but I don't know if you have a fact checker for the media at the same time.
Pastor Graham, you and I both know that this president has said things over and over that aren't true.
No, I don't know that. I don't sit around and try to find every fault in the president every day, looking for everything that he might have misspoken or missaid. I don't do that.
That he might have misspoke. He missaid 6,000 times last year alone. He just misspoke. And what about the media? And it's important because this guy has a lot of followers, a lot of folks who listen to him. And he has turned towards this false prophet who's accused of witness tampering and committing adultery and money laundering, sexual assault, rape. And he's turned towards this false prophet, and he has said, Franklin Graham has said to his flock, this is the guy we've been waiting for. God put him there. It is divine. This is our leader. We shall follow him, and we shall do so without question. We get it, Melvin. You don't like him. You don't like Christianity. That's not the thing at all. And that's absolutely not where I'm at. I know this is going to sound like the old, hey, my best friends are black, but I have friends who are Christian, and they don't subscribe to these horribly cruel and insane ideas. So I know that there's good people out there, but those folks are definitely in the minority, because damn near 90% or just over 90% of evangelical Christians back this guy and continue to back this guy. But they are starting to fall away. But they're not falling away because of the cruel and inhumane things that he does. Now, that stuff is okay. But we're in the midst of tax season right now. And there's an awful lot of people that are doing their taxes. They've done their taxes now. I think there are some folks that do it early. I wait almost up until April 15th. Why? Because I got to pay every year. I know, good problems to have. Fine. But for the folks that are expecting a return, they're doing their taxes now. And although they've not received the checks yet because the IRS is way behind because of the government shutdown, they're starting to realize the real world effect of the so-called Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that passed in December of 2017 by nothing but Christian conservatives in both houses of Congress. And they're realizing now that conservatives, even conservatives, are now realizing that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act had nothing to do with tax cuts for them. And that actually, it's a huge tax hike for them. And that all the tax cuts really did just go to the top 0.1%. So this is super special. Over on Twitter, there's a user called I Break for Ants. And she decided to put together a bunch of these tweets from conservatives who have now decided to do their taxes. So BH, Distortion 12345, says, I just did my taxes and paid in. Made the same as I did last year, and somehow I owe $4,000 more. WTF, I voted for Trump, but I will not be in the next election. These are all conservatives. This from April Henderson at Amundsler. We're paying $5,000 more in taxes for 2018. Imagine our surprise. We voted for you at Real Donald Trump. We advocated for you. I've lost lifelong friends in support of you. And I'm truly disappointed. Not only have our taxes increased, but you have done nothing to fix our health care. Replying to it, Donald Trump again. I voted for you the first time, but after you screwed me on my tax break, I won't vote for you again. Especially after I started on my 2018 in return. It's a joke, the taxes you are keeping from a working person. Good luck in 2020. And it goes on. Worst tax return I've had in a decade. I admit I voted for Donald Trump, but he has officially lost my vote for 2020 over and over and over again. And people are finally starting to get it. So this from the Washington Post, the headline, Republican support higher taxes on the super rich. This according to a Fox News survey. Quoting here, radical, crippling, a total fantasy. Critics of AOC's have lined up to paint her proposed 70% tax rate on income above $10 million as extreme. I don't think it goes far enough. Extreme, unrealistic, and not in line with what voters want. But A new Fox poll finds that raising taxes, income taxes on 10 millionaires is a policy that enjoys broad bipartisan support among 85% of Democrats, 54% of Republicans, and 70% of registered voters overall. Hiking taxes on incomes over $1 million was almost as popular overall with 65% support. Asked in broad terms to choose between cutting taxes or raising spending, a majority of Americans opted for the latter, with only 40% preferring tax cuts. Numbers like these underscore the growing disconnect between what voters want and what most elected officials are willing to consider. Research in the past year has shown that politicians in D.C. and at the nation's state houses believe that the public is much more conservative on economic policy issues than they actually are, meaning they're totally willing to screw themselves to protect a couple of rich white millionaires. But it's not true. Many political scientists believe that that is due in part to lawmakers' cozy relationships with big business and their deep-pocketed lobbyists who tend to prefer more conservative economic policies. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017 provides a prime example of how the disconnect affects real-world policymaking. Republicans in Congress passed a package of changes to the tax code whose benefits largely accrued to businesses and the wealthy. The bill was supported by a large coalition of conservative groups, including Americans for Tax Reform, the American Legislative Exchange Council, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and Americans for Prosperity. So, you're doing your taxes, and you're conservative, and you're paying a whole hell of a lot more. So, how did this go? And by the way, this guy still enjoys incredibly broad support from the Christian conservative evangelical community. So the Republican president, along with the Republican House and the Republican Senate, decided that they were going to give themselves and Donald Trump a massive tax break. Now, they know the conservatives are so concerned about how to pay for everything. They know. They hear you. They know your concern. And they know that you want to make sure that everything's paid for. Everybody needs health care. How are we going to pay for it? Everybody needs an education. How are we going to pay for it? What about the illegals on the border? My God, how are we going to pay for it? Donald Trump wanted a massive tax cut. The rich white conservatives in Congress wanted a massive tax cut. The casino owners in Las Vegas wanted a tax cut. These contractors that are owned by millionaires, these NFL team owners, they all wanted a massive tax break. But we hear you, conservatives. We know that you want it paid for. So how are we going to pay for it? You, my child, are going to pay for it. So money is now officially being lifted out of your stupid pocket and put into Trump's pocket. That's what you voted for. You're welcome.
We must reject the politics of revenge, resistance, and retribution, and embrace the boundless potential of cooperation, compromise, and the common good.
So I speculated that the only reason that Donald Trump wanted the government back open was so that he could give his State of the Union, and I still stick by that. He decided to get up there and complain about all the investigations and the Democrats that don't want to help him out. And his practice seems to be continuing with the idea of white supremacy. He still very much pushes that. But he's not losing those folks, but he is starting to lose some of the conservatives. Those folks that are doing their taxes right now are realizing what a pile of crap it is for their wallets, no matter how much they may want to save the babies. And by the way, not the brown babies. The children that died while they were being cared for on the border, they're not concerned about those ones. The people that can't afford their medicine, they're not concerned about those ones. The ones that live in poverty, they're not concerned about those ones. They just want the babies to be born, and then they don't care. So while he was giving his State of the Union speech, which, by the way, full disclosure, I did not watch. Probably the first one in almost 20 years that I have missed. I have not missed the State of the Union since I think the late 90s, early aughts. It's been almost 20 years since I've missed a State of the Union speech. I just don't – I love watching. I don't care who the president is. I always watch them. I always want to hear what the president has to say. It's our president, like him or not, our president. And it's always been a him up till now. I did not watch this one, and I just caught the highlights afterwards. But in the highlights, I noticed quite a few things. And you know what I did instead? I went to the freaking pub, because F this guy.
And then we had the case of the governor of Virginia, where he stated he would execute a baby after birth to defend the dignity of every person. I am asking Congress to pass legislation to prohibit the late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in the mother's womb.
Execute a baby! Governor Northam in Virginia wanted to execute a baby! Of course, it's not true. By the way, since when are you folks against execution? So there was one line that the Democrats wore white because of the women's right to vote. You know, a lot of the ladies wore white, and they did it in unison, make a statement. And Donald Trump had a line, I think he was, because they said that they wanted the State of the Union to be about comity, not comedy, comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y. And in an effort to do that, he wanted to highlight how many women now work in the Congress.
And exactly one century after Congress passed the constitutional amendment giving women the right to vote, we also have more women serving in Congress than at any time before.
Trump is a horrible human being, a horrible president, a horrible Christian, or a good Christian. That's up to you to decide. But I think that his presidency is going to enable somebody that might not have really, at least in modern times, ever been able to get in there. If we end up with somebody like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders as president, it's going to be in response to somebody like Donald Trump. That's sort of one of the positives. I think that we would not have had Barack Obama without George W. Bush. I mean, we try these fascists sometimes, and then when we get sick of the fascists, we take these wild swings back. And I think this election is going to be no different. And when this guy, who has been accused of sexually assaulting women, he's being accused of rape, and then of course, run down the list, the guy is just a puke. People go, ugh, okay, swinging back wildly in the other direction. And the reason that we now have more women serving in Congress than ever before, I'm going to say, is a product of this a-hole's presidency.
Major priority for me and for all of us should be to lower the cost of health care and prescription drugs and to protect patients with pre-existing conditions.
So this line means absolutely nothing when anybody of a conservative bent says it. Sorry, it's true. And with this one, it's particularly egregious because he's done everything he can to lower the kind of care that you're able to get, repealing the ACA, super duper increasing the freaking prices, or if he lowered the prices, it's on insurance that doesn't cover anything. And hold on. Protecting the pre-existing conditions. So how is that working out? Well, not good. Because the president, along with a ton of red state governors, are in court right now fighting to get rid of your protections for pre-existing conditions. And old dingbat goes on.
An economic miracle is taking place in the United States. And the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations.
The headline here, Republicans ask Democrats to please leave Donald Trump's tax returns alone. quoting here, Republicans in Congress have formally asked Democrats to stop trying to get their hands on President Donald Trump's tax returns. Democrats are holding a hearing Thursday on the importance of disclosing his tax information and how it would reveal how much money he makes, who pays him, and how much tax he pays. Top-ranking Republicans on the House Tax Committee asked its chairman not to request documents, even though federal law explicitly gives him the power to do so, and even though Republicans used that power to oversee Barack Obama's administration. The Republicans went on to say, hey, we didn't do this to Barack Obama. Wrong. Too many investigations. Wrong. They were cool with it when it was Obama, but God damn it, please don't do this to our guy. I think one of the things that you'll find out, because you'll get the president's current tax returns too. Remember, Barack Obama and President Bush, they released their current tax returns as they were president too. And what you'll learn is how much of your money went from your pocket into his pocket now that the tax returns are officially law. And by the way, this is not one of those things that has to be approved by Congress. There was a bill that went in front of Congress about 2 years ago, I think it was. My horrible representative, Jamie Herrera Butler, voted against making the president release his tax returns. That's just her. That's just the Republicans. But this committee doesn't have to have this passed through Congress. The Ways and Means Committees can just ask for them, and they have to be turned over. So the Trump administration is obviously going to fight this. They don't think that they should have to do this. And my God, why are you being so unfair to us? But the Ways and Means Committee, they don't need to pass this through Congress. They can just have this. And the president wrapped up in the way, only the only way that, well, that he knows how to.
If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way.
He threatened the Democrats on the goddamn House floor that you guys better not do this or there will be war. So, where are we at? Yeah, it's been unhappy days with President Dingbat and the horrible, horrible things that he's done. But you put Democrats in charge of Congress. And that subpoena cannon that we were told that the Democrats were just going to open up and unload, they are officially opening that up, and they are unloading on this guy. We are going to get these tax returns. They can fight this in court all they want, but the overwhelming odds are that we are going to get these tax returns. He has to give them to the Ways and Means Committee. And I think, mark my word, I might be wrong. I've been in the past, and I will be at some point again in the future. I think, and I'm making a record right now, I think this could be the thing that makes him resign. He covers his tax returns like he covers his own genitalia. He's so afraid of anyone seeing it or touching it or getting too close to it. So much so that those who have gotten close to it, he's paid him out $120,000. Sorry, it's super gross, I know. But anyway, stuff is coming. Stuff is going to happen. Yeah, they're doing a lot of horrible, 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 horrible things enabled by the Christian conservatives in this country. But it's coming to an end. And I know you don't, I know when you watch a television episode of Law and Order, whatever, you know, they figure it out and they wrap it all up within an hour. And that's not the way these things go. They're long, they're painful, they're years, years long, but they do end. And this one, I think, is really starting to wrap up. And I'm super glad that we're all here to see it. Now, just remember, ladies and gentlemen, when you get your democracy back, don't piss it away again, okay? So we don't end up with another one of these guys, okay? Sorry. Don't. All right, ladies and gentlemen, go, go, go. Be yourselves. Go do your thing. This is The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. Individual episodes are also available on those platforms. Subscribe so that you never, ever miss us. Questions, comments, hate mail, tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard not only to inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with you, our listeners. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing up there in snowy Seattle. And thank you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.